This day marks the one-year anniversary since the kidnapping of four members of the Christian Peacemakers team in Iraq. They were working against the occupation and to build solidarity between people in North America and Iraq. Two of those who were kidnapped were Canadians, Hamid Singh and James Loney. CPT is still doing work in Iraq against the occupation, and today we speak with Doug Pritchard of the Christian Peacemakers team. Hi, Doug.
Good day.
Has the CPT been deterred since the events of last year to continue to work in Iraq?
It certainly has become much more difficult. It hasn't lessened our determination to support the people of Iraq who are suffering still, but it has become much more difficult for them to work at building civil society and more dangerous for them to be seen in association with foreigners such as ourselves. So that we've not been able to return to Baghdad, nor to areas south of that, who've also become similarly inflamed, as is the situation in Baghdad. We've been restricted to working in the north lately.
Okay, and how do you feel that sort of the international outcry that for the CPT? What do you feel about this international outcry that happened after the kidnapping?
Well, we feel really blessed by the incredible support that we've received from around the world, from leaders and individuals in the Muslim world and in the Christian world, all faith traditions, from political leaders, from other humanitarian aid and human rights organizations. It really was quite overwhelming. And I think it was very significant that Muslim leaders in Iraq and elsewhere in the Muslim world called for the release of these Christian peacemakers, even though they were from another faith tradition, and even though they were from, two of them were from the occupying powers in Iraq. And leaders said, this is against Islam, this is against the interests of the Iraqi people, and they should be set free. And that's quite a courageous statement and a very generous one that they made. And we were pleased that following that, Christian leaders in North America and the United Kingdom made similar statements calling for the release of Iraqis who were being held illegally by coalition forces. And I think there is some bridge building going on in the midst of this crisis that was quite unexpected and for which we're very grateful.
Great. And what was the Canadian government's response to the kidnapping and the CPT's position in particular?
Well, they were very supportive of the kind of work that our men were doing. Initially, the accusation that was made against them in the first videotape that appeared on Arabic television was that these men were spies. And the Canadian government joined many others around the world saying that our men were not spies. They were there doing humanitarian work in association with the Iraqi people and called for their safe release. So we're very thankful for that response from the Canadian government, as from others who knew us and knew the work that we do and our intention. We don't agree necessarily on the best way to peace in Iraq with the occupying forces and some of their allies, but we certainly were agreed that the rebuilding of civil society is the only long-term guarantee of peace and security in Iraq.
Okay, and the rash of kidnapping, the rash of kidnappings of foreign aid workers, it has compelled the team to severely curtail its size and visibility, right? And the Iraqi partners, they've acknowledged the potential danger that CPT has in its presence there in Iraq, but it has encouraged the team to remain in Baghdad, right?
No, we've not been able to return to Baghdad. Our workers had become very well known in the course of this crisis because they were on television a lot. Human rights organizations with which we had been working before said, gosh, if one of you comes into our office now, we're going to be perhaps at greater risk now of you being kidnapped or us being kidnapped or accused of collaboration or perhaps caught in the crossfire. So they've asked us not to visit them at this point because our people are too well known. The other tragedy that we've become increasingly aware of since then is that those organizations are not able to work themselves, that as the attempt to create sectarian divisions within Iraq increases, it's become harder and harder for human rights groups to work at the grassroots within Iraq. Some of them have been threatened. Some of their workers have had to flee the country for their lives, and that's quite distressing.
Okay. And can you describe the history of the CPT and how it's been received within the Christian community?
Well, Christian peacemaker teams began in the late 80s at a time when the nuclear arms race seemed to be spiraling out of control, when much of Central and South America were under vicious dictatorships or civil wars, and the Cold War was certainly very cold. And at that time, Christians were challenged by for a more activist peacemaking, not just to stand apart from war, not just to criticize war, but to actually take the kinds of risks that soldiers take. If we're going to bring peace, it's not going to come without a cost. Soldiers demonstrate their courage as they go into situations, hoping that their activities might bring peace. We're convinced it never can. But are we willing to take any risks while we have that conviction? And that's really the motive that brought Christian peacemaker teams into a number of war zones around the world since then. We've had teams in Israel-Palestine, in Colombia, in Chechnya, in Bosnia, Haiti, and we've had this team in Iraq since October of 2002. Initially, they were present under very difficult circumstances as Saddam Hussein's totalitarian regime was oppressing the Iraqi people. And at the same time, the Iraqi people were suffering further because of the impact of the United Nations imposed sanctions. So we tried to work within these constraints of a repressive regime to try and do some reporting on the experience of Iraqi people under that, and also to try and forestall the war that was being threatened at that time. We supported the United Nations weapons inspectors as they searched for weapons of mass destruction. That was the supposed cause of this war. We now know that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and that the United Nations inspectors' efforts were fruitless because there was nothing to be found, but it was being used as a pretext for this war. I think most Iraqi people greeted the fall of Saddam Hussein with delight. They didn't want to be invaded, they didn't want to be bombed, but they were sure glad that Saddam was gone. And there was a lot of goodwill towards the multinational forces in those initial days and weeks. But all of that's been frittered away. Lack of preparedness for the post-Saddam era and the brutality of the occupation forces has really turned Iraqi people against this presence of foreign forces.
Well, exactly, and there's been... the situation has been flaring up in Iraq, and there's been 143 people dead today in Baghdad. And
it was a horrific day today, and I think what I find really tragic is that people say Saddam was a bad leader, that his regime was awful, but it's worse now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any of us wanted that or expected that. That's certainly not what the Iraqi people were expecting with the fall of Saddam, and so their hopes have really been dashed. And there's incredible anger in the country because of the abuses like we've seen at Abu Ghraib, the continuing detention of 14,000 Iraqis without trial, without due process by the multinational forces. This is against all international conventions. So that's built incredible anger because so many families have been affected by having loved ones disappeared for unknown periods of time and abused in detention. The economic occupation has also been creating a lot of anger as billions of dollars in reconstruction funds were taken by foreign companies with little effect, it would seem, on the lives of ordinary Iraqi people. They're saying, we could have done this work, we could have rebuilt this country, where's all the money gone, who's profited? And that's built incredible anger as well as people are suffering economically.
Okay. Well, in response to that and to the situation in Iraq, what will be the role of the CPT in the near future in Iraq? And also with the anti-war movement there?
Well, our work now is really in an exploratory phase as we're in the north of the country where we've not worked before. There are folks there who are hoping for some measure of freedom, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, wanting to learn more about human rights, which were crushed under Saddam's regime, and now they have an opportunity to explore what their rights are and to promote that within their own society in the northern regions of Iraq. And they have expressed an interest, some of these groups, in having some training, some expertise that we have shared with them, and we're looking to see if there are opportunities for us to do that in a way that is safe for them and helpful for them. So we're really in an exploratory phase now in this new part of the country for us. We don't know if it's going to be possible for us as well-known foreigners to return to Baghdad or region south of that or not in the near future.
Oh, okay, and in terms of Canada, there's been a growing anti-war movement happening here. Is the CPT going to be involved in that?
Well, we certainly have concerns about Canada's role in Afghanistan. We had a team, myself included, that visited Afghanistan just as the Taliban fell. We're convinced that the mission that the Canadian government has given its troops there is an impossible one. You can't carry both a gun and a food bowl and expect to be accepted by either party in Iraq, in Afghanistan. One day the troops are out hunting for Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and everyone's an enemy. And the next day they're supposed to go out and talk about school reconstruction, and everyone's supposed to be a friend. And you can't do it. And we saw the tragic example of Lieutenant Trevor Green sitting down to a village meeting, taking off his helmet and getting a hatchet through the head. You can't be both a soldier and an aid worker. And the Canadian government, I think, has given our troops a very confused and dangerous mission trying to do both those things.
Okay. Well, thank you, Doug Pritchard.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks for your time.
All right.